One of the issues that I want to discuss this morning is a perennial issue, and one that I think is no less important today, if not more important, than it's been in many, many years, but in the last 20 years or 30 years. And that issue is when we go through the Avos, beginning with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, particularly when we come into this Sefer of Vayishlach, the Torah is a very honest document. I don't mean to say that we're Maminim, and the name Maminim, but it leaves nothing to the imagination as far as the Chazal is concerned. Chazal, in many instances, may appear, and I don't say this at all, but it can appear at first glance to be not as perfect as we would like the Chazal to be. It begins, of course, with Avraham Avinu. But Avraham Avinu goes with Sarah the first time, and he suddenly realizes after many years that she's so beautiful, and he goes to Gror, Melech Gror, and he's afraid that he can come to Melech Gror, and they'll take it to his wife, and they'll kill him. So he tells him, say, if you are a Chosinat. The same thing happens later on with Yitzchak. And that's a question, first of all, not only that he didn't tell the truth on the surface, actually he did tell the truth because he was a half-brother to her, as indicated, those days, half-brothers, you were permitted to marry half-sisters, and half-brothers were permitted to marry half-sisters. But on the surface, it wasn't really telling. He was trying to convey something that wasn't. But more than that, he placed his Sarah in tremendous danger of losing her honor. And the same thing happened with the Yitzchak and the Rivka. And the Torah doesn't say anything there that he figured that it would go there and come out and she'd be saved. There was nothing there about that. He just left it in. There was no indication that she was going to put up a struggle or anything. So it's a very difficult parsha to understand. And then when you come to Yaakov Avinu, it gets even more difficult. How he took the Bechor, when you just look at very superficially, Esav comes from the field, a lot of pshatim, I'm not going here, we just want to, all the pshatim are proper, they explain it, but on the surface, you look at it immediately, you don't see it that way. And then, of course, later on, when Rivka discovers that Yitzchak is planning to give the main brothers to Esav, so she brings her Yaakov and tells him that we're going to put on his clothing and I'm going to put on some sheep skin on you and you're going to feel as woolly and as hairy as Esav and you're going to go to to Yitzchak and you're going to tell Yitzchak that you are Esav. And that's a very difficult thing to understand as well. And then of course the final thing that's very difficult to understand is what happens in the coming weeks to Seder, it's already this Seder by Yishlach, that and Shechem made a, it seems that they made an honest body, and they were, they circumcised themselves, and after they circumcised themselves, you know what happened with Shimon and Levi came, and they slaughtered the entire city. How can you explain things like this? And yet, he gets very upset about it. Like, gosh, then why did you make me foul of the, among the people who were? He was very frightened of the repercussions. And they say, how can it be? Like, Zona, that our sits, it should be made of Zona. We had every right to do this. And I think that this is just the beginning. It tells us something about the Torah. Not only tells us about the honesty and integrity of the Torah. The Torah is willing to tell us, give us the warts as well as everything else. I don't even think that in the end when we analyze it, they are warts. But even if we, certainly on the surface, they are warts. And any other document, of course, cleanses the great heroes of, tell them I'm not in. Cleanses the great heroes of their various stories and narratives, religious narratives, historical narratives, or otherwise. And here we give it everything. And in certain cases, the Ramban, for example, openly said that they were wrong when it came to the case of Sarah, and that he says Sarah's a Chosi guy, and when it comes to the case, of course, in Shem. And some of the other Rishonim say, no, they're not. But even if we accept the Rishonim, said they're not, then maybe more inclined to accept them than they accept the others who are more critical. The fact of the matter is, when we read it, when anybody reads it, I recall I once went into a hospital, to Montague Hospital, and there happened to be a Scottish woman there. This is many, many years ago. And I was visiting some Jewish worshiper of mine, and she noticed that I was, "Are you a rabbi?" And the first question she asked me, she said, "How can you explain how Jacob stole the sheep from, and he spotted and he speckled it?" He had a whole story this week. He spotted and spotted and speckled, and he peeled the rod that he made. He had a whole business of it. And then he said, "Look, I'm excited." And really, he wasn't excited. He says, You robbed me 10 times. And that was true. But I think what it tells us there, and I don't have to spell it out, the Torah tells us that we have to respond. We're living in a world of human beings. We're living in a human society. And in our negotiation of this society, walking through this society, we have to be very realistic. It's Simon Avos, Maisa Avos in the one. Maisa Avos in the one. To know that we just can't be, that there are groups of people who are not religious at all, and then our people, outside our people, a bunch of hypocrites that tell us all over, how could you do this, how could you do that, they're killing here, they're killing here, they're killing here. The fact of the matter is that this is what life is, we have to do what it is. We don't want to do it, but for self-protection, self-preservation, we have to do it, and that is the moral thing to do. That's the most important thing that comes out, and I don't want to go into various obvious examples of what's happening. So this was what I wanted to tell you for the very outset. And to end with this part, with a story about Ramiel. Ramiel was a great darshan, and in many ways probably the greatest darshan of the 20th century. Today we hardly hear about Ramiel, because Ramiel was a great Talmid Chacham, really one of the outstanding Talmid Chachamim. Was Zarki Moshe. Derek Moshe was one of the greatest Sfarim. He was a student of Chaim, a prize student of Chaim, and probably the prize student of Reb Shimon Shkod. And he was known as a god. He was in fact a candidate against the Rav, Bishop Bessel, he was the candidate for the rabbinate of Tel Aviv in 1935. The Rav came with a great deal of fanfare. He was about, at that time he was 32 years old, and Rabbi Elami must have been about 48, 49, so he was still young. I mean, I don't know how you measure age today, but 48, 49 was still young. And can't wait till I get there. And Neil got the position. Well, of course, he was a rabbi of Antwerp, but he had written already the LME, he written the Darabash, which were outstanding sparring. And somehow it got pushed aside, I think because of his political allegiances. You know, if you were Mizrahi and you were this, and the new world came on, and it just pushed aside. It pushed everybody aside. So it's not. But he had a tremendous. He was a rabbi in Europe. Before he became a rabbi in Antwerp, he was a rabbi in Russia before the revolution. And just at the time of the revolution, his congregation, his community, broke up into two parts. There were a lot of revolutionaries in his community, and there were people who remained from, but the older people remained from, and the battle became very, very, very powerful, and the struggle of father stopped speaking to sons, and sons stopped speaking to fathers, and brothers didn't speak to brothers. It broke up every Jewish family at that time. The revolution, they were the revolution, they were the vanguard of the revolution at that time. So he brought the story of what was going to happen in Parshas Vayishlach, and Yaakov Shoma Kitime Esdina Bito Uvana Vayu Esmikneo Besleda the Ephraim Yaakov Advoam, and Yaakov kept quiet. He heard about that his daughter was violated. Vayetzit Hamora Dishem Yaakov Adabarito, and then he had the whole story that they were wanting to become Jews, and they said, "We want to become Jews. Limo come up. We want to become Jews, and we were willing to sacrifice us to circumcise ourselves, even as you just sacrificed." Some that Akhtazos Neos Lachem Imtiu Kamonu Zimo Lachem Kozakas. They gave a condition. They said, if you want to become part of us, you have to circumcise us like we circumcise ourselves. And the Chazal make a very big story here to try to explain how Shimon and Levi then decimated the Shem by saying, he said, Imtiu Kamonu Zimo. They were circumcised, not because they want to be Jews. they circumcised themselves because they wanted to integrate with the Jewish people at that time. So he says, you have to circumcise yourself kimono. We circumcise the same Hashem because we want to prove our allegiance to Hashem. This is part of our belief, this is part of our faith. You didn't do it kimono. That's the explanation. That's a, you know, almost a flimsy explanation. It's probably a true explanation, but it's a flimsy explanation of what happened. And then it says, and there are going to be business reasons, and it's going to be financially, economically very salutary for all of us. And finally, it came, destroyed those by Yahargu, called Zohar. Vayoma Yaakov Shimur Levi Acharte Mosi Lavi Sheni B'Yoshevareti. You made me angry and wroth, and to make me foul. I'm using a better word than the word that he really used among these people. And he was really frightened, and he says to them, "Vanim say this part. We're small numbers, and that's who alive v'ikuni v'nishmat anyvedi. And this is going to lead to the destruction of our people. How can you allow things like this?" And then they said, "Vayomru hakizona yaseh sachosayim." And they said, "Well, should our system just become a zona?" And that with that one sentence, and one tell, we were prepared to do what we had to do, and we think we're right. So he says that he called a meeting, and Amiel had great, apparently he had great call upon his people, even though they were divided there. And he called a meeting in the town that he was the love, and he says the entire town came. The revolutionaries came, and those who remained very religious, and all the broken families came. And he said, this is the battle. One says, look, we're put upon, so we have to become revolutionary. We have to destroy whole cities, devastate. That's the thing. You can't make omelets unless you break eggs. That was the famous call of the Bolsheviks and of the early revolutionaries. This is what you have to do. And Yaakov said, but look, this is going to bring our enemies upon us. He's very, very frightened. You know, you notice that Yaakov is not so frightened. It doesn't say one word about the morality of what they did. That's the amazing thing. Not one word. You look at it, this we said, but not one word about the morality. All he talks about is that you have made our reputation foul, and that they're going to come and hit us and destroy us. And this is really one of the blights, it seems, in Torah. They made an agreement, and they took advantage of the milu that they, as the goyim were trying to live up to their agreement, you took advantage of that moment when they were vulnerable and destroyed the whole entire city. But they said, look, these goyim, what they did to us, they had sullied the morality, the inviolability of the Jewish people. And he said to both of them, he said, you're both right. So what is the answer? The answer is not to become a subvulture. The answer is not to become a revolutionary. The answer is in the next question. Vayomer Elohim El Yaakov Kum Alei Beisel. That's the answer. It was a magnificent, which resounded at that time. He says, go to Eretz Yisrael. And he was able to see all Jews. He says, if you make your choice, go to Eretz Yisrael, whether you're a socialist, and that's the way people looked at it. There was the overwhelming majority of Jews who were revolutionaries at that time, stayed behind. And it became the leaders of the Russian Revolution. Originally, 7 or 8 of the 11 members of the original Politburo were Jewish. And if you go to Germany, you had Rosa Luxemburg. And if you went to, you had Anna Palka, like later on in the Second World. Wherever there were, the heads of the revolutionaries were Jews. He says, come tear yourself. I'll lay myself. So when you read it next, this coming Shabbos, you'll have that kind of sense. Now we come to the great battle between Yaakov and the angel, and the Malach. And it doesn't say Malach, it says Elohim or Elohim. How do you read that word? You can read it Elohim, that it was a Malach. You can read it Elohim. Actually, the Rambam doesn't think it was like a great dream. It was really not an event that happened, but it was a struggle within Yaakov himself. And at the end of the struggle, he has a struggle with himself. And what is difficult if you say it's a struggle with himself? It's a struggle between Elohim, the Elohim that's within all of us, All of us were created the Tzelem Elokim. So we are in the image of God. We have an Elokim, and our Elokim is always fighting with us, with our Esav. Everyone has a little bit of Esav in him too. Even Yaakov had Esav. I mean, that's the whole story, that Yaakov could become Esav for a few moments. There's a little bit of Esav. And then he says, Sarisa, Im Elokim Adam, Betuchah. And you struggle with God and with Esav, or with man, and you try. Now I can understand that if I have a struggle in life, and my struggle, should I do it or should not do? Should I cheat or shouldn't I cheat? Should I cut a corner or I shouldn't cut a corner? When you have this, it's a battle. And if I win, so I won. So I'm either one side won or the other side won. What do you mean, is Teresa look here? So that I somehow fought with God, I struggled, and I even triumphed over my God? Because sometimes if we have the God with us, there has to be a balance between the two. That's what he says. I fought against struggle because sometimes somebody becomes so taken, so overtaken by the other king with him, he can become the most intolerant person. And he can do things that arouse. They were very much saved. That's what the zealots are sometimes. Sometimes you need zealots, you need charedim. I don't mean charedim in the blood, but chared bar Hashem. Yeah, he picked us at certain moments in history. He was kind of, he was a zealot. He killed the Nasibi Israel. There's no question about it. But not in his nature. And that's why later it says in Pilsen, in Pinchas, that I give him B.C. Shalom. This Pinchas you think is a terrorist. This Pinchas is a zealot. This Pinchas at that moment had to do what he did, and he saved the people. But he follows the course of Aaron. He still always Shalom. But to become part that you become integrally this a zealot in a way. I mean, that's in every issue you face, and there is no balance. So that's what I think the history, the vort here is. The word is here. That sarisi, ki sarisa, you struggle with the kid, with the God, and with Adam, and with the name Batucha. Now we have a pasuk here, Vayigoser Yaakov Levada. Vayivase Yaakov Levado, Vayeovek Ishimo Adalos HaShachar. And Jacob remained alone. And he struggled with this man until the dawn. Now Chazal tell us in Chulin, what do you mean Vayivase Yaakov Levado? What do you mean? Here he was confronting the great battle of Jewish history. Had he lost that battle, we wouldn't be here today. And the Gemara has a great to do about Yetzei Yechidi Velayla. And it says specifically, Yetzei Tam Chachem Yechidi Velayla. You endanger yourself. Tam Chachem, particularly, specifically, if he goes a long walk along, and there are all kinds of reasons and explanations at night, he lays himself open. And here by Yvasi Yaakov about this. So the Gemara in Chulin tells us, I guess we can learn Chulin. Here's an amazing thing. I think this is probably the most important lesson we can get for a lot of us anyway. Torah Sinai brings part of it. Mm-hmm. Vayivasa Yaakov, before I come to this, I want you to know that was the end of the story, the great battle of Yaakov with himself or with the Sarah Shalesa. He goes away limping. And that's really the first halacha we have in Kashrus. And of course, that's the Gita Darsha. And he goes, well, so it could tell us that in these great battles, when we're struggling with ourselves, in these ultimate battles of who we are, we walk away limping. We don't come out unscathed. It's not an easy battle. You win hands down and you just walk away from it. If it's really a struggle for oneself, for one's own integrity, you walk away a little bit. It's not a mumsh ain't over. Later on it says it comes shalom to you. You get over it, you can deal with it entirely. But you should know that these battles are very mighty battles. Anyway, here it says, Vayivasa Yaakov Vado, Amar of Loza, Shinishtayer Alpachim Tarek. He left a few dishes behind, small dishes, worth a couple of pennies here and there. So here he takes his wife, he's afraid, and he separates his whole encampment, his family, and he leaves his wife, his wives, and the two encampments, and he goes away to this little fjord or island to bring back Pachim Tanin. He may have left some pots and dishes there. So the Gemara learns a remarkable lesson from here. Mikan the Tzadikin? So you know who's a tzaddik? What would you say who's a tzaddik? Tzaddik one who wears tefillin all day long. Tzaddik one who learns all day long. A tzaddik is one who does tzedakah all day long. Who is a tzaddik? The Gemara tells me, "Mikan the tzaddikim shechovav aleihem amon aviyosim begufa." A tzaddik is one who loves his money and worth his life. That's who a tzaddik is. He loves his money more than his life. The kochach lama, and how come he loves money so much? Lefisha ein poshtin yedayim v'gesa. Because their money is honestly earned. There is nothing more rewarding and less available than money that's entirely honest. And there isn't one element of question about the money you have. And the Chachomim did, and I'm going to give you another marvelous example. We'll spend a little time on this. I don't know how many of you, I doubt very much how many of you remember Rapentin. Rapentin is Ezra Sarag Lugacha, was of course the head of Ezra's Torah. Ezra's Torah was a premier Torah, so he still is, but from Rapentin. And I remember I once went to Rapentin, and everybody knew it. So if you spoke, the whole world can. He was a great person. Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin overlapped a little bit, but Rav Henkin was the senior posek, and Rav Moshe, of course, as long as Rav Henkin was alive, never, even if he disagreed, would not publish anything that would go against the Pesach of Rav Henkin. Later on, somebody something came after Rav Henkin had passed away. Rav Henkin was the Tzaddik of Tzedek Elul, and he took over the Ezra's Torah. He was the administrator of the Ezra's Torah, collected the money. So one of the things he did was they used to send out thousands of letters. And he used to take the stamp and put it in the water around his lips and put on the envelopes. And people used to call him on the telephone all over the world. They called him for a time. Well, they came to his office. And as he's talking to him, he was either stuffing letters into envelopes. They didn't have these big machines. He stuffed the letters into the envelopes, or he put the stamps on the envelopes. He had other people helping him too, because he didn't feel he had the right. One moment he's being paid by Ezra's Torah, he has no right to answer your questions unless he's doing something. Can you imagine something like that? It's unbelievable. I saw it myself. The man lived to 90, 95 years old. At the end, it was very hard. He was blind. But I saw him, he was in his early 80s yet. And he was already very hard of seeing. And he didn't waste one moment. He said, I get paid for this. He never asked for a raise either, I want you to know. And don't forget, the cost of living was going up. And he used to put in the envelopes all the time. There were thousands of moms that's in the whole country. He had people doing it. The Jets of Graves was paying $16 a week or something to kids to do it. But he would do it too, and he would stand up. And while he's answering you, he had a knack of talking to you while he's going like this. So a man who knows that he didn't take 1 cent, you're in your office. He's supposed to work 8 hours a day. How many of us? All of us. We call up, we speak to our family, speak to our friends, take a half an hour here, we go to the water cooler. Whatever you want to do. It's impossible to have every penny that you've earned. You can say it's an honest penny. You can say, well, this is the way the world is. When they hire me, they expect me to work 8 hours a day. They get me 5 hours out of the 8 hours. That's what they expect. You can, I mean, you find out that ahead of that. But that's what he says. Lefishein poshtim yedehem begezel. If you earn money and there's no element of gezel in the money you have, there is no greater achievement. Because this tells them who they are. And I don't think anybody really can live up to this kind of a standard. I mean, the best of you. It's a very hard standard to live up. There's a Gemara, this leads me to a Gemara in Bamasia. Have a mitzvah, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chiya. When Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Chiya were arguing, Amale Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chiya. So Rabbi Chanina said to Rabbi Chiya, Ba'adadi commences. You're arguing with me, you have the temerity to argue with me. Chas v'chalila, im shtakcha Torah Yisrael, ma'vinale. Mipupulin. And I'm so, I don't know if they did it in this kind of hope. He says, you know, how can you argue with me? If all of Torah were lost, and we have to retrieve and recover the Torah, I'd be able to do it through my children. I would be able to recover. And so I'm so great, and you have the temerity to argue with me. We're dealing about Gdolei Hadoros here. So Rafiya says to Rafiya, how did the commences? You have the audacity to argue with me. The author of the Torah, the Lotus Doctor from Israel. If it's up to me, I won't allow Torah to be forgotten. You say when Torah will be forgotten, you'll be able to retrieve it and recover it. If it were left to me, it never would be forgotten. May I be there? What will I do? How will I do it? Avlinovich Adina Kisnet. I go and I put seeds of flax in the ground. We could do the nizbit. And then I would have the flax, and then out of the flax, I would make nets. Look at this process. How would I do it? How would I make sure Torah won't be lost? I'll plant seeds of flax. The flax has to grow. How long it takes for flax to grow. When the flax grows, I'll take the flax and I'll make nets with Sajina Tevi, and I'll be able to catch deers. The nets, I'll be able to catch deers with these nets. Umachlina Bistrayu Liyatra, I'll take the meat of the deer and I'll give it to Yisomen. Varifna Megilsa, and then I'll take the skins of the animals that I capture through the flax that I grew and made the nets. And then I'd spread the skins and make it into parchments. Make them to Megillas. Because Vane Chamisha Chamushe. And I would write on these Megillas the Chamisha Chumshe Torah. Vesalit the Masa, and I go to a town. Umakarina Chamisha Yanike. And I would call five young boys. Vachamisha Chumshe. And I teach each one of them, each one, and I teach a chumash. And when they do this, and I make them go over and over, then I teach in the Shisha Sidra. And I told you, repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. So lo, titake, Torah Yisrael, not Torah Yisrael. So what is so remarkable about this story? If I wanted it, it's emerging. There's no more Torah left in Israel. And I have to do the quickest I can. So when I go, I'm going to first go to a field, I'm going to sow a flax, and then we take the flax, and then I make nets of it. I go to a fish store, or I go to a hunting store, and I say, give me some traps, and I get the traps as quickly as I can, or I go to a place they sell parchments. What is he doing here? So he looked at my friend, and my friend was like, what he's doing here, he said, if you want Torah to be enduring, if you want Torah to be lasting, then you have to know that it has to be honest from the beginning. Then. I don't want to go to any place else. I go to a store, I don't know if the man has been honest in the pricing and how he dealt with it, he bought it, wholesale, whatever he did. I don't know if this animal is really a kosher animal, I want to make a scroll. Whatever you want, from a moral point of view, from a religious point of view, from any kind of point of view. A ritual point of view, that, I don't know. That's how honest you have to be if you want Torah to be less. It's unbelievable. That's why Yivosa Yaakov Labado. Yaakov remained alone. He remained alone for Pakistan. But Pakistan didn't need much. He got a little teacup he brought back. But that teacup represented 100% honest endeavor. And there isn't one element of dishonesty in it. Then that is the mahos of who he is. That's everything he is. I can speak a good. I could talk the talk, you know, of what it is to be full. But as you say, taking you walk the walk, and this is what he's really saying. Last thing I wanted to tell you was, how do you know that when you're 13 years old, your bar mitzvah? Where did we learn that from? How do we know when a fellow is 13 years old, he's bar mitzvah? We say in the Avos, whereas Moloshes, I can't read it, so tiny you. Ben Shloshes Shrei Lemitzos. That's in Perek Hamishi, Mishnah Tov. When you're 13 years old, you're about, how do we know that? Is there anyone here, if anyone here knows, I'll give you, I don't know, Pepsi Cola or something.
Shimon Belevi.
Ah, who said that? Who said that? Okay, so I don't have to give you. So how do you know the Shimon Levi? Very good.
Ish
Bacharbo. That's what this week said. So Rashi says in this Mishnah over here, and then you see it takes us up to that. Ben Shloshes Reish Lemitzvah, Dichsid, because it says in this week, Ish, first of all, he brings the Ish or Ish or Tiyanshu, Mikoch Hatos, and then he says, that's when you're chayav, you're chayav to be a korban, you're ready, you're chayav onshin. That's a big problem. We'll talk about that for a moment. And he says, how do you know that? So he says, Ish. But how do you know Ish means 13? He says, Asher Chan Hassan, as we find there, meaning in our Sedra of Ayishlach, by Yikhu Shnei Vene Yaakov Shimon Velevi Achi Dina Ish Charbo. And then he said that Vaha Haya Levi Ben Shlosh Esrei Shana Kishetachso Shtei Shana Shosei Yaakov with Beisel. And then and the on this Mishnah, the Tosha Jumpeth, he brings this Rashi and he figures out, he says, you have to know there was 13 years when since the time when he took Leah, the first 7 years he worked, he didn't have Leah. So from the time he had Leah until he left, it was 13 years. And you count it, and if you say that each one of the first three children Shimon Reuben and Shimon Levi were born 7 months apart. They weren't, and then you have he was on the way. He was a half a year on the way. He figures out there was a winter and a summer and a winter. He goes through the whole calculation. So Levi, when he killed Shimon Levi, and Shimon was 7 months apart. So one was near the end of the, they were both 13 years of age, and you see that even though they were 13 years of age, within both of them were within 13 years of age, they were called Isherei. One was called just the beginning of the 13th year. So therefore, you know that when a man becomes 13 years, he's an Ish. Interestingly, so that's you would not know this. I'm very happy that you have a sedra by Yishlach. You never find you want to. That's a halacha. You know, in Bereishis, you find almost every sedra you can find halacha. The halacha of Shevavah. How do you know Shevavah? By Rabbah. So that's a big problem. So the Pirkei Rav Elazar says, he says, by Shevavah, he says, Minayin the Shiva Yemei Mishnah. How do you know you have Shiva Yemei Mishnah? So what does he learn here? It says, Yaakov Avinu Lameit. We learn it from Yaakov Avinu. Yisiv Malei Shavuazos. There's a problem. Why do you say Yaakov Avinu? Malei Shavuazos. That was not Mato. That was Lava. Yerushalmi, however, says, and the Rabban discusses this. Yerushalmi, however, says, no, we learn this, that Moshe Iskin Shiva Yemei Mishnah. That Moshe made up the Kohanim. And the reason is very simple. He didn't want to give Lavan credit for that. He was the one that gave us the halacha of Shiva Yemei Mishnah. So, but I think that if you look at it, why did it say Yaakov? It said we learned it from Lavan. He was the one who said Malei Shavuazos. Well, it's interesting. What do you mean Malei Shavuazos? You had it this week. Malei Shavuazos Lashon Zafa. A week is even, you say Shavuazos is Lashon Zafa, even though it has the end. So why do you say Malei Shavuazos? It says Shavuazos. It says Shavuazos. That's a Shavuazos. Malei Shavuazos Shelzos means finish the week of this one, referring to Leah. And then we can go to the Zos. Then go to the next Zos. Then we go to Rosh. So this is what he learns. This is really not what he really learned from Lavan or not. Otherwise, we're really a very amazing thing. We're learning from Lavan three. First of all, the beginning of the wedding. What do we say when we take the person to the Badekin? What do we say? Achoseinu atayila alpei rabav. We learn that from Lavan. That was what Lavan gave Rivka. Then we can learn Shuvi Yemei Bereishis. Shuvi Yemei Mishnah. We're going to learn from Lavan too. And we have Ma'onu Shel Simcha. Where is the first time you find the word Simcha in the Torah? I'll tell you an amazing thing. You find the word Simcha once in Bereishis, once in Shmos, once in Vayikra, once in Bamidbar. You find about 13 times in the Dvarim, in the Parshas Today, you find about 7 times. And the first time you find it, the first one who ever said the word Simcha was also by Yetzirah Lezion. Yesterday, he said, that's the first time. So the whole idea of Simcha, he said, Simcha Baba'ono. You really learn from Lavan as well. Anyway, the Torah Tmima says, I don't understand the whole thing. So we're saying that that's when Onesh begins. We learned that from the Korah and the Durham. That's why you have to bring the Korah. That's what I was just reading to you. So he says, if you take the Gemara, the Gemara Shabbos says, Dal, you have to take a certain amount of years. His Onesh begins when you're 20 years old. The father is no longer responsible. Maybe for the Onesh. But the boy is not punished. The man is not punished until he's 20 years old. Because we learned that from the Meraglim. So we say until they were 20 years old, anybody who was until he was 20 years old was able to go to Eretz Yisrael. After 20 years old, he can go to Eretz Yisrael. So the Torah Tmima says, therefore, when we say Baruch HaPetrani Me'Onche Shazer, so we usually, the father says, Baruch HaPetrani Me'Onche Shazer, he says, the father saying, thank God, I feel the responsibility of this child. Unfortunately, Gemara and Shabbat says, and Gemara and Lamed Gimel says, that sometimes we don't understand why young children die, why babies die. So the Gemara says there in Lamed Gimel, they died because of the sins of their parents. So therefore he says, the Torah says, it shouldn't be the father who says it for the son, but the son, when he reaches 13, should say, Baruch Shepetarani Shepuncho Zed. And therefore he uses the word Zed. It's not nice to say, the father said, free me from the responsibility of this child. When he shows Zed, doesn't say that. So when a man is talking about his father, he doesn't want to say, free me from the responsibility from the sin of my father. That he doesn't want to say. And where do you say it? Because you have a pasuk in Mishlei that says, that talks about a father, Zeh Yelodetcha. He is the one. This Zeh is the one who gave birth to you. That's your father. And therefore you say, he said, that the son should say, Baruch Shem Atrani, Baruch Shem Atrani. Thank you.